And now, from the gleaming spires of Chicago, broadcasting to Niflheim, Svartalfheim, Olympus, throughout the nine worlds and beyond, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. You are tuned to the immortal sounds of Radio Free Asgard.
And hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 184 of Radio Free Asgard. My name is Tom Harris, and as always, we're coming at you from beautiful Chicago, Illinois. And I actually had a question about that this week, and this is coming from Mark in Stratford, Ontario. Mark is a longtime listener to the show, but it's been a while since we've heard from you, Mark. Where have you been? You know, when we don't hear from you folks, we worry about you. We think something horrible has happened. Anyway, Mark is saying that he's noticed that at the beginning of the show, we announced that we're coming from the gleaming spires of Chicago. And yet, at the end of most of the episodes, we go sliding down the Rainbow Bridge back to Midgard. So Mark is wondering if Chicago is actually part of Asgard. It's a good question, that. I'm glad you asked that. Mark goes on to say that he is not enjoying the current Thor stories, the girl Thor stories. And we're going to come to that eventually. I'm not going to rush right into that coming out of Thor, God of Thunder. But from what I gather, from what a lot of people are saying, a lot of people are not caring for this new series. It's not shaping up the way they'd hoped. Particularly this last issue seems to have gotten a bit of ire. And I've only seen a couple of pages from it, but from what I saw, it's like, yeah, I'm wondering. You know, I wonder how long that's going to last. And certainly, I've heard that sales on the new book are not nearly as good as sales on the old book. Now, nonetheless, we'll be covering the books, and at least we'll be talking about them at some point in the unforeseen future. Now, next week, we're going to be doing something a little bit different here for the next few weeks, but we'll talk about that later, and maybe I'll let that be a bit of a surprise next week. But this week, we actually have an issue of Thor, God of Thunder to cover, so let's go ahead and move along with our review.
Cross the Rainbow Bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, mighty Thor.
And indeed, we are covering Thor, God of Thunder, issue number 25, the God-sized final issue. Now, this issue is a little bit different from most of the ones that we've covered in the series, because this issue consists of several short stories that are very, very loosely tied together. So there's a lot of credits. Let's start out with the cover. Cover art looks like to be by Esad Rebic. At least I think that's who did this, shows Thor, and he is holding Mjolnir in front of him, and there are lightning bolts firing out of Mjolnir in four different directions, and makes it look like he's holding a giant glowing H. And on the far left side, we can see that it looks like young Thor's arm, and then the middle we have present-day Thor and his Avengers helmet and costume. And on the far right, we actually see that the left side of Thor's body is that of old man Thor. So he's got the heavier armor and the destroyer's arm and big billowy cape. And it's a really beautiful cover. I have to say, it's really, really nice. Turning to the splash page, we have a giant ad for Big Blast and Rocket Raccoon. Yeah, okay. The credits of the story are Jason Aaron was the writer. There's several short stories in here. The 13th Son of the 13th Son. R.M. Guerra is the artist. And Julia Brusco is the cover artist. Blood and Ice, Simon Bisley did the artwork. Unworthy is by Esad Rebic and Ives Sforzina. VC's Joe Sabino lettered the entire book. Esad Rebic did the cover. And we have the variant covers, which were done by Simon Bisley, R.M. Guerra, Milo Manara, Tom Rainey, and Chris Sotomayor. John Moisson was the assistant editor. Will Moss is the editor. Axel Alonso is the editor-in-chief. Joe Quesada is the chief creative officer. Dan Buckley is the publisher. And Alan Fine is the executive producer. Once again, we have a roll call here on the front page. Thor, the God of Thunder, in a recent battle on the moon. Nick Fury told Thor a secret that somehow made him unworthy to wield his enchanted hammer, Mjolnir. It now rests on the moon's surface. Eventually, Thor will become King Thor, the God of Thunder of the far future. He rules Asgard and has three granddaughters known as the Girls of Thunder, Frigg, Elisiv, and Atli. Once very long ago, he was young Thor, the God of Thunder of the distant past. This Thor is worshipped by and hangs out with Vikings, but he is not yet worthy of carrying Mjolnir, so he makes do with an axe named Jarnbjorn. One day he will need Mjolnir, though, in order to battle the likes of Malekith, the king of the Dark Elves and the leader of the Wild Hunt. He is a very skilled magic user and a constant threat to the Ten Realms. Ten Realms? How he gained those skills and became such a threat is one of the many Tales of Thunder. And yes, as you guessed, we have several short stories linked together broadly by a kind of framing sequence here, which appears to be what is being drawn here by Isad Rebic. And we start out here in Asgard in the far future, and Asgard looking very Asian. It's like Asgard is full of pagodas and Buddhist wats and things. It's an interesting look for Asgard, and even in the far future, it doesn't really strike true. I'm kind of wondering if this is really supposed to be Asgard or not. Anyway, so we have this very Asian-looking city, and we have the Girls of Thunder, and they're in a library. Lots of books here, and Frigg is talking here. "You know the rules, Atli. Grandfather Thor insists we spend time each day bettering our minds, not just our sword hands."
"Hmph. I never heard of a god slaying trolls with his mind before, Frigg."
"Then you've obviously never read the saga of Lord Mandrax the Mind Mauler, or Lady Greywave and the Godbrain Warriors of Galore. All those wondrous stories, and so many more, right here at our fingertips in the great library of Asgard. There's a lot you could learn in this place, Atli."
"Sure, Elisiv. I'm about to learn if I can leap from that window without breaking my legs."
"How about this one? Here's a tale even you can appreciate, little sister. One full of murder and villains most foul. It all began eons ago." And Elisiv is reading here from a book called Tales of the Dark Elves. And the art style changes incredibly here. Everything has gone blue and green. And that's because this takes place in the dark and dreary realm of Svartalfheim. And we have dark woods, and there's a dark hooded figure being hauled along in a cart drawn by a giant boar. And they come across other dark elves while they're there, and he says,
"I'm looking for Lady Mazzaroth of the Black Bile Clan."
That's me, sir. You're a war rider, aren't you? You bring word from the front lines?"
"I do. Your sons are dead."
"No, please. Which ones? I have 13 sons."
13, eh? Well then, seems that you're in luck, lady. By my count, you've still got one left."
And she hurls a package at the woman's feet, a giant sack full of heads.
"His Majesty Kraw, the uncontrollable King of the Dark Elves, thanks your family for its loyalty. When you have more sons, do let us know. Long live Svartalfheim."
And the woman looks into the bag, and sure enough, there's a bunch of heads in there.
"By all the beasts of the bog."
And we have a little child here coming up and talking to his mother.
"Mother? Mother, why are you crying?"
"Because your brothers have all come home, just like your father, and all 12 of your uncles before them. All dead, all killed in some useless damn war."
"Mother, will I have to fight in the war?"
And obviously it's a little boy, so yeah, probably.
"And leave me all alone when you die? No, not you. Not my last little boy. Not my Malekith."
"Then can I stay here with you forever, my mother?"
And we then cut to some future time, and we see that there is some hand on the boy's shoulder, and the boy's like, "Mother!" And we get some exposition here. "And so it was in the 19th year of the 43rd Troll War that Malekith, a dark elf of the Black Bile Clan, the 13th son of a 13th son, was sold to the Undertaker Elves of the Southern Swamps for 2 sacks of snake livers and 1/2 barrel of pickled toads. A more than fair price for a boy his size.
Oh, stop your blubbering, boy. I couldn't very well lose another son without getting nothing in return, now could I? You know how much these dogs eat. And besides, look at the bright side. At least you won't have to be a soldier.
And they go carrying off Malekith along with the gravediggers or undertakers or whatever the hell they are. And she turns around and, you know, she's surrounded by these dogs. And there's a dark elf soldier. And we've shifted scenes, I guess.
Corpse burner!
Yes, sir.
Fighting's finished in the East Bottoms. Give our boys a proper burning. Leave the stinking trolls to rot.
Yes, sir.
So this is apparently, we're getting a little bit of the origin here of Malekith. And we see Malekith on the battlefield, and there's gathering up all the corpses of the dead elves. And you can see that they've been fighting trolls, and there's ravens all around and picking at the corpses and that kind of thing. And one of the corpses that he's dragging starts to speak.
What are you doing?
Burning corpses. I'm a corpse burner.
You hear the talking, don't you, boy? I'm no corpse.
They said to clear the field. If I don't clear the field, I get nothing but slug slime and tree bark for dinner.
I'm a snake thrower in the Royal Thorn Troopers. Just took some shrapnel from a spider mine is all. Fetch me a mender with some fat leeches and a jug of cold rattle wine, and I'll be just... Here, what have you done with my legs?
And you can see that the soldier's legs have been chopped off.
If you're a soldier, you should have known better. All soldiers ever do is die.
No, wait, don't you?
And Malekith throws him on the heap of dead soldiers, and he's throwing some kind of liquid or, you know, gasoline or whatever, and throws a torch on, and he's like, "Yarg!" And they're all burning. And we shift scenes to a later time, and we see young Malekith, and he's in a cage, and he's surrounded by other prisoners in this cage, and somebody's talking to him.
Where'd they catch you, boy?
Burning corpses. Is it wrong that I miss the smell?
Damn trolls have even less respect for the living than they do the dead.
I'd advise coughing as loud as you can whenever they're near. If you're lucky, they'll think you got the plague. Makes them less likely to eat you. Have you got the plague? I probably look like it, don't I? But no, I haven't had so much as a stale grub to swallow since they grabbed me off the road, stumbling out of a tavern in Grogtown, much to my eternal shame. I tell you what, little corpse burner, there's a nest of big meaty millipedes over there in the corner. I know, because they ate the last prisoner's face off while he was sleeping. How about you wrestle one out and hold him over that torch for a bit? A few bites of roasted worm might just give me the strength I need. The strength to do what? Why, to show you a magic trick, of course.
And we see this old dude has got his really long beard and horrible snaggle teeth and... really, really unsavory looking individual. We then shift yet again to the future, and we see later Malekith, he's stabbing people or killing trolls or whatever, and we see the old man, and he's up on the, like, floating, and he's shooting lightning out of his hands, and people are dying all around, and it's kind of interesting here.
Look at it. Have you ever seen anything so beautiful in all your life?
He's apparently talking to the troll who he just stabbed in the neck. And the troll's like, "Ugh." We have a little bit of a caption here. In time, war against the trolls gave way to war against the light elves, and then to border skirmishes with the dwarves and terrorist attacks against the gods. For all those years, Malekith apprenticed with the wizard, who it was rumored had once been of some meager renown. And then the art style suddenly shifts and looks very, very different indeed, though it's the same artist. Some time has passed, and we see Malekith again, along with the old man, but instead of being in a prison with all the, you know, corpses and smoke and fighting and all that crap,
They're in a beautiful palace, and the palace is got it laid out with a big breakfast on the table, and there's, you know, ivy and pillars, and this is generally more what you would think of as being a nice setting for a couple of wizards. And the magical silverware is kind of carving up the food. It looks like, I don't know, does it feed it to them? It looks like it might be. It's kind of floating around the wizard. And the caption says, "Until one day, over a breakfast of mashed maggot jam, candied spider eggs, and bacon-wrapped baby snakes."
"Congratulations, Malekith. Today your training is officially complete."
"Master, that cannot be true."
"Oh, it has been true for quite some time now. You surpassed me as a wizard long ago. You are the most naturally gifted spellcaster I've ever seen."
"Master, please."
"Now it is you who teaches me. At long last, you have taught me my true purpose in life. Malekith, tell me, how would you like to assist me in bringing an end to war?"
"What?"
"All around us, our people are suffering, enduring horrors, dying like flies, because of one senseless war after another. Someone must steer this realm to a different patch, while there is still a realm left to be saved. We can do it, you and I. We have the power to unite the clans, to make the king see reason, to bring peace. You are the perfect instrument of change, Malekith, forged in the tragedies of war. No child need ever grow up again as you did. You can see to that. You can bring peace to..."
And it looks like he's choking on something, or... Anyway, there's a knife sticking in the back of the old man's head, and there's blood coming out of his mouth.
"Malekith, what have you done?"
"You dare speak to ending war? What do you even know of it? I lost 12 brothers to war, and a father, and a dozen uncles. I was sold by my own mother. I burned 3,000 corpses, some of whom hadn't even finished dying yet. That is what I know of war."
"And that's why you're the only one who can bring peace, Malekith. Please."
And we see all the silverware now is kind of surrounding the old wizard, is getting ready to plunge into him.
"To say the war should stop is like saying I am weak, flawed, something that should never have been. Tell me, do I look weak to you, wizard?"
"Malekith, I hear you at night. I hear you weeping. I know what you really..."
And we see that Malekith has plunged all of the silverware into the old wizard's body, and he is laying apparently dead on the table. Or if not dead, at least he's close to dead.
"War is the fire that forges elves' souls. So long as Malekith lives, there will always be war. There must always be war, for without war, what am I?"
"I know what you are. Too late for me. But now I know, and before I die, I will ensure that everyone who ever sees you will know as well."
And he takes a magic bolt, and he fires a magic bolt at Malekith, and strikes him in the left half of his face, and he goes, "Arrgh!" And I guess you can figure out what's going on here, is that, you know, he's getting the dark half of his face. And we then shift scenes yet again to another period in the indefinite future. And we have kind of an old man or woman. Oh, it's an old woman. It's Malekith's mother. And she's in her house, and there's a bunch of dogs here, and they're going woof, 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 woof. And a hooded figure comes and approaches.
"Damn dogs, what's with all the barking? You better not have killed another customer. How am I supposed to sell you off if you keep killing all the..." "Oh, good evening, my lord. If it's hunting dogs you're looking for, you won't find any fiercer this side of the Plague River. They're right killers, they are."
"They look underfed."
"Well, sir, you know how it is. Times is tough for all of us, what with the war and all. And I'm just a poor widow without I'd watch my hands around them, my lord. They've been known to bite a... Mother of maggots! Malekith, is that you, son? What's happened to your face?"
"Two sacks of snake livers and a half a barrel of pickled toads. It didn't last long, did it, mother?"
"Please, Malekith, you have to understand. I did what I had to do. I was only trying to feed the dogs."
"I understand completely. We are the lords of the wild hunt, are we not? The dogs must be fed. And I can promise you, mother, on my life as a dark elf, these dogs will never go hungry again."
And he sheds his robe, and he is the very familiar-looking Malekith. He's wearing his costume and everything, you know, the blue and red, and he's got the, you know, the flowing white hair, and he's got the burned side of his face. And he sends the dogs after his mother. And to get a full-page spread here, the dog's kind of lunging forward, going, arr, arr. Thus was born Malekith the Accursed. Thus was sealed the fates of millions. And we shift back to the far future and the Girls of Thunder and the reading out of the book. And Elisive is reading.
Many wars, great and small, were to follow until there came the war to end them all. When King Malekith called together the lords of all the dark worlds, the greatest of Asgard's enemies, a gathering of foes unlike anything ever seen. What followed was called the War of the Realms, the war that made the world tree burn from tip to root. The war that would ultimately lay waste to...
And there's a rumble of thunder, and Elisive looks up, and and Frigg is like,
it seems Grandfather would rather we read something else. I think you're right, Sister Frigg.
Just when it was getting good. Grandfather Thor never talks about the War of the Realms. All we know is that's where the war where he had to...
Hatley, how about we read something a bit less contentious?
And she picks up this giant book, and it's called The Many Adventures of Young Thor.
It was the age of the Vikings.
And we have a new artist here, and I think, is this Simon Bisley? I'm not really sure. It's hard to tell because it's not really signed or anything. But anyway, a drastic change in art style here.
It was the age of Vikings, and there was trouble upon the seas of Midgard.
And we have Thor, and he's here in a Viking ship, and there's, of course, surrounded by Vikings, and there's three Viking ships here that we have.
Hold steady, warriors of Midgard. We shall drink this day in victory, or in Valhalla. Either way, I swear to you on the eye of my father, the god of thunder will raise the first glass.
And somebody's calling from above.
Lord Thor, the sea, it turns to blood, and ice.
And Thor hefts his axe, and he says,
then heft your axes and I'll be damned. Here they come.
And there's like ice giants kind of lunging forward, and they're like,
frost giants, Odin's beard,
first volley, loose.
And the boats are shooting like fire arrows at the frost giants, and they're striking the frost giants in the face. It's a beautiful double page spread here. I think this is Simon Bisley. It looks a lot like his stuff. The ice giants are all angular, and they're wearing like mammoth skins on them, and they've got the tusks like sticking out from the side of their heads, and they've got like big clubs and giant icicles they're carrying as spears. And the fire arrows kind of embed themselves in the face of the frost giants. And they're like,
arr, human insects.
And they just kind of lash out and smash the boats.
Hold course. Ready another volley,
says Thor, even though one of his ships has already been destroyed. And they're shooting more of these arrows out.
Here now, where do you think you're going, little Vikings? How about we... Hold on. Is that the son of Odin?
And Thor leaps forward with his axe, Gjallarbrú, and he's just smashing at these frost giants. The frost giants have grabbed one of the Vikings, and the Vikings shooting, more arrows! We need more! And Thor is like,
for Asgard!
And he cleaves the head of the frost giant in two with his axe. And it's not just the skull, he's cleaving the whole thing in two. So he starts at his head and is like cleaving the whole body in half. Apparently he does that. And Thor's like, ha, see? They die the same as anything. Their insides just aren't as warm.
Sail on. They're holding their ground, fighting to protect something. Whatever's happening here, whatever's behind these massacres, the answer lies just beyond. Where the sea is all blood
The ship is smashed by apparently one of the frost giants, and see, the Vikings are skewered by a giant icicle, and the frost giant raises out of the water with his spear icicle things, and there's like Vikings skewered on him, and he's like
spearing whales in a barrel,
and there's lots of violence going on. And all of a sudden he falls because somebody looks like somebody's chopped off his leg. And we see Thor and the Vikings swimming through the water, hopefully not getting hypothermia. And the we shift scenes here to some sort of magical spell that's happening. And there's like a circle of stones, and they're all like blood red colored. And there's a bunch of ice giants kind of gathered around it. And one of them is like an ice giant wizard.
It's working. Can't you feel it in the tips of your icicles? That's the power of the blood ice.
I feel nothing but impatience, wizard, says the frost giant. My warriors, you asked for blood. My warriors and I have given you an ocean's worth. The blood of every human village along the coast. But this is still just a lifeless skull I see before me.
And so we see that there's a skull on the table, and the importance of that has not yet been revealed to us.
And now the god comes that the god of thunder has been spotted. We brought enough giants to slaughter humans, not to make war on Asgard.
It is no simple matter to steal a soul back from Hela and her land of the dead. The spell takes time, but once it is completed, I assure you will never need to worry about the gods again. He will see to that. He who was the fiercest Jotun ever spawned. He who brought Asgard to the brink of ruin. All hail Laufey, the one true king of the giants.
Ah, so they're trying to bring Laufey back to life. Interesting.
Rise again, O great one in blood and ice. Reclaim the frozen bones and be reborn.
And the magic starts to happen, and the blood is kind of raising up like a mountain, and we have the skull raising up, and his eyes are glowing. And he's like,
he comes! Our king returns! But we need more power! We need more blood!
And a voice comes from off-panel, and blood you shall have! And it is Thor, and he whips his axe and chops the head off of the frost giant wizard. He and the Vikings are standing there, and Thor says,
blizzards of it! Cut them open and make it snow, men of the north!
And they're like, for Midgard! And there's a big battle scene here. The giants are trying to smash all the humans.
We are frost giants of Jotunheim, the sons of Ymir. We are not frightened by your thunder, little god.
And then he's immediately destroyed by a stroke of lightning with a crack of the doom. And he's going, arg.
When you get to hell, little giant, says Thor, which will be mere seconds from now, I want you to tell them of this moment. Tell every damned soul you meet. Tell them how you learn to fear the thunder.
And Thor raises his axe. And we then shift scenes to a later period of time where Thor is back on a Viking ship, and they're raising a toast to their victory. And of course, the Vikings are all carrying like these horns of meat or whatever. And Thor is drinking his meat out of a giant frozen eyeball. So, ew.
It was a fierce winter that year, all across Midgard. So fierce, some said the oceans froze, and whole villages disappeared into the fog. Who's thirsty for cold mead, says Thor.
Aye, say all the Vikings.
But as always, the gods brought the spring, and the world was renewed, and its people moved on. Though the wise men might note how winter never truly perishes, it merely hides its face for a little, and bides its time, until it can return, colder and fiercer than ever.
And we cut to the bottom of the ocean, where we see the skull of Laufey, and it's sitting like on its red octopus looking thing. So maybe it is coming back. I do not know. And we're back in the future again with the Girls of Thunder.
When we met young Thor, we should have warned him. We should have told him to find that skull when he had the chance.
Aye, says Frigg.
Elves and frost giants! I'm sick of reading about everyone else fighting elves and giants. I'm ready to kill some for myself.
Calm down, Atli. We'll find a different story to read. Here's a good one about Mercurio, the fourth dimensional man, or Mangog. I know you love stories about...
Now! No more books! There's not a story here I haven't heard a billion times before. It's time we were writing our own stories. The Adventures of the Girls of Thunder. It's time we were...
And there's a giant thoom as she strikes the bookshelf. And a giant book comes falling down, apparently, from like on top or top shelf or something. It's this huge book. It's wrapped up in chains. And it lands on the table with a boom and a big burst of smoke. And it sits there all ominous and shit.
Great! Another book, says Atlee. Now they're even falling from the sky.
Where did it come from, says Elisive.
Must have been knocked off the top of the shelf when Atlee struck it.
I thought I'd read every book in this library, but this one, I've never seen it before.
Doesn't look like anyone's seen it for a very long time, says Frigg.
What's it called? I can't make it out. It's wrapped in chains. Do you think we should even...
And Atlee just kind of picks up the chains and tears them apart with a crink and tosses the chains aside.
Any book wrapped in chains sounds like one that might actually be worth reading. Go ahead and read it.
There are pages torn out. Not all of them. I see writing.
What's it say?
And Elisive picks it up and she starts to read.
It says, it was a time of dark kings rising, of old enemies with old ambitions.
And we have a picture here of Malekith sitting on his throne without most of his clothes. He's like lounging around on his throne wearing his underwear and gaiters. And we have a shot of him. And then we had a shot of Roxxanne and they're in a ship. And we have, you know, somebody is on the radio.
This is Roxxanne, drilling Submersible 5. We've located the source of those unexplained energy readings. And I'm afraid I still can't explain them.
And we see that they've traced down the skull. And there's a comment here of old enemies gaining new power, of sins and sorrows. And we have a shot here of the hammer of Thor on the moon.
Hell's bells! Is that...
That and surprises. And we see a picture of girl Thor, and she's holding the hammer, and there's lightning pouring on the hammer.
Appears to be a lady with a hammer.
Not just any hammer, says Frigg.
It was time for an all-new Thor.
And we get a double-page spread here of girl Thor, and she is surrounded by of evil villains. And we have, looks like a gladiator from the Shi'ar. Though it looks like he's carrying a spiky club, so maybe that's not gladiator. Maybe that's somebody else. And we have a troll, and we have Ulic. We have... Well, looks like Loki. It looks like the Loki, Agent of Asgard Loki. We have the Enchantress. We have Mangog. Hela kind of lurking there behind Girl Thor. And we have, looks like the Minotaur kind of lurking in the background too. So basically it's Girl Thor surrounded by a bunch of Thor villains. And we ship back to the library. We have Old Man Thor appearing on the scene.
But not all would celebrate, says the caption. Where did you find this book? Says Grandpa Thor, and he's smashing the table, and the girl's like, yeah.
It fell from the sky.
Be gone, all of you.
But Grandfather, who is this?
Out, says Thor.
First time I've gotten in trouble for reading a book,
says Atlee, and they go taking off. And they leave Old Man Thor alone here in the library, and we get, you know, the old man, and he's... kind of looking thoughtfully at the book, and he puts his hand on it and kind of dusts off the cover. And we get a little bit of exposition here.
It was a time of great change, a time when heroes fell and worlds burned, a time of war and sacrifice, of upheaval, of cosmic decay, a time when even the greatest of all the gods was laid low.
And he's brushing the dust off the book, and we see the title of the book is called Unworthy. And we get a parting shot here of present-day Thor on the moon. And he's trying to lift the hammer, and he can't. And he's straining, and he's shouting, "Rawr!"
Next month, Thor number 1. And that is Thor, God of Thunder, number 25. And, of course, we do have a few words to say about it. And we will be talking about it right after this message.
In 1939, Timely Comics published its first issues. It later changed its name, first to Atlas Comics and then to Marvel Comics. In 2014, Marvel polled its fans asking for the 75 greatest Marvel stories from those 75 years and published that list in print form. The unofficial 75 Greatest Marvels Countdown will walk through all 75 of these stories every Wednesday from December 31st, 2014 to June 1st, 2016. Join me, Blaine Dowler, and a cadre of other hosts including established podcasting greats and emerging talents, as we run through the list, discussed each story in the context of its original release, and determined just what makes it so great. The unofficial 75 Greatest Marvels Countdown can be found at Bureau42.com, on iTunes, and on Stitcher.
And we are back. So, yeah, of course I have a few things to say about this issue, this God-sized final issue, which isn't really that much longer than a regular issue. Sorry, folks, hate to say that. It's just a few pages longer. So, obviously, we have a couple of short stories that are kind of tied together. The first story, kind of the origin of Malekith, I think is really interesting from a writing point of view. Don't much care for Aram Gera's art, I have to say. The coloring is strange. I mean, the coloring is basically all blacks and blues and greens, very much muted color palette, or not a very diverse color palette anyway. The artwork can be a little bit hard to read as far as it's not really obvious what's going on all the time. It actually takes a little bit of trying to figure things out and trying to figure out what's going on. And that's kind of been the theme for this issue. The stories that we have, I mean, the only part of the story that's really clear is our little framing sequence by Isad Rebic and Ives Fortzina. And that stuff looks fantastic. The stuff is really good. I don't mind the fact that we've kind of got this little short story format for the last issue. It's setting something up with Malekith, obviously. I mean, or maybe these are inventory stories. I'm not really sure what's going on here. But we have, Malekith, and we have his origin, basically, and then we have, the threat of Malekith to come. And then we have this story by Simon Bisley. I've always had this kind of sneaking admiration for Simon Bisley. His artwork is not necessarily my thing. He's done some really fantastic covers over the years, and I really liked a lot of the covers he was doing at DC back in the 80s and 90s. And here, see him do a whole story. It's interesting. It's interesting because I haven't really followed the series that Bisley followed. You know what it reminds me of? It really reminds me a lot of Matt Wagner. And that's a name that I don't know is really around comics much anymore. But back in the 80s, the mid-80s, he was the bee's knees. Did a series called Mage. He did some work for DC. Did like a Demon miniseries and all that. And there's some places where this artwork reminds me a whole lot of Matt Wagner's work. Some of the art is a bit rather stylized and more than a little wonky. I will say I like Simon Bisley as a stylistic artist, and I think he works great on covers. I don't know that he's that great of a sequential storyteller, though. So the pages look nice, but it can be very difficult to tell what's going on. And I think you can tell with some of the struggles I've had in describing what's going on the page. So that's about it. I think that it all ties together fairly well. Again, I'm not sure if these were like fill-in stories that were intended for fill-in issues and they just had to use them, or whether there's supposed to be some sort of a theme here. Because the overall theme that I would get from this is that, we've got the Giants trying to bring Laufey back to life. They're trying to work this into potentially the new Thor series, and also just reminding us that Malekith is still out there, which I don't think anybody had really forgotten anyway. Anyway, so that's about it for this week, folks. Thanks once again very much for listening. We really do appreciate it. And of course, if you want to be involved in our Lee Kirby retrospective, please let us know. You can send email to radiofreeasgard@gmail.com, much like Mark from Stratford did. Or in fact, you can get a hold of us on Facebook and join us there. Just look for Radio Free Asgard on Facebook and you will find us. And with that, we are leaving the loop and Buckingham Fountain and all that stuff in the gleaming spires of Asgard, crossing over the Rainbow Bridge back to Midgard, because of course, Chicago is part of Asgard. And we'll see you next time here on Radio Free Asgard. You have been listening to Radio Free Asgard, a production of Tom Harris USA Productions, which is totally responsible for its content. The Mighty Thor and all associated characters are mostly copyright Marvel Comics. The stories presented are done so for educational, review, and entertainment purposes only. No ownership is implied. The silly voices, however, well, they're all me.
Musical selections from Eden, The Invincible Sword of the Elfsmith, are copyright Mots Vent and are used with permission. If you like what you've heard on the show, we hope you'll leave us a review on iTunes, tell your friends, or even join our Facebook group. We really love hearing from our listeners, and we appreciate all of your support. Thanks once again very much for listening to Radio Free Asgard.